Annette, she you know, she was very kind to her.
Yeah.
And when she was so ill, she really was kind to her. In the end, no, wait, thank you, ma'am. Not unless you're going to have some.
I should be going to sleep soon.
But there was a sort of twinkle in her eye, really, wasn't there?
Oh, yes.
Which made you feel you could get away with quite a lot with her, really. I mean, in the sense of you could tease her or, you know, I mean, you could spark off her a bit.
I didn't know that I'd say one could get away with a lot. I wouldn't like to have tried it. Not really, but
no, not really.
She was very human. You could chat to her. That was the point, but I don't think I'd like to have been too cheeky because I think she...
Oh, no, well, because I was on a slightly different relationship with her anyway. I was purely a casual visitor, you know.
Oh, yes, I mean, in later years.
What did she like, actually, Mrs. Blake, in regard to food? I mean, what sort of things did she like most?
Everything. Had a Catholic taste.
Did she? And no problem in sort of digestion or anything like that?
None at all. Not even to the end.
No, she really did enjoy her food. You know, that time Tom and I took her to the White House.
She just went slightly peculiar towards the end when I had dished her up a very nice soup. And I had gone out of my way to buy these French beans, which were rather expensive in France. I thought she likes them. So I did those French beans. And then I got the message. She said, "I don't like your frozen vegetables." I said, "This is really ridiculous, because there they are, so I hadn't used them all, so I took them in." It didn't seem to convince her. I'd paid about 3 times more than was necessary. I gave them away. That is only a few days before she died, so you can imagine.
So she was still noticing.
I'll get a copy. I'll be
nice. But, I was really sort of leading on to the thing about whether she was concerned about her health at all. I mean, whether she worried about her health at all. I know when I came here last time, they were generally concerned about their weights, both of them. And obviously she was making a rather ineffectual effort to reduce her weight. And did you sort of notice any attitude she had to health, or was it a rather rude common sense to speak about?
No.
Not talking about...
I think she wanted to have good health, and so she always had the best attention and medical help there was going. You know, when she had the operation done on her shoulder, she had it done by, I think it was Sir Reginald Watson Jones, who was the Queen's orthopaedic surgeon, you know. And it was always the best, just to make sure that... everything was done just right and so on.
Yes, one would expect that in a way, partly because she would just not want to be a nuisance to people, I suppose, would want to make sure she was independent.
Well, I think she just liked to think she was having the best that there was going. Don't you agree? Mr. Harrison asked me if she was, you know, worried about her health, and I said, well, when she had anything done, it was usually done by the best person there was going.
Oh, yes, indeed.
And she liked to think people were doing it, because I remember before she had that operation done, she told me who, you know, Reginald Watson Jones was going to do it.
Oh, yes, indeed.
I
don't think she worried about her health, really.
She had very good health, I suppose, didn't she?
Very extraordinary good health. just the talk.
Oh, I see. Sorry, I thought it was on screw. Thank you. Did she talk much about her health? I mean, I know she was trying to get her weight down, for instance, when I came.
Oh, yes. No, she didn't take that seriously at all.
No, I didn't think she did.
No, she didn't actually talk much about her health. Her health was very good, except that she had chronic bronchitis, which everybody's got more or less. And there were times, you know, when her knee would blow up and to the bill for Lord Hunt for taking tests and blood. You never hear the end of those things. Once they take me. So you never found out whether she had gout or what.
Mm.
I think it was all circulatory. It came up the side, the circulation comes up.
Mm.
And in France, she did actually start with a painful knee and more acute pain in her shoulders, and so it was obviously circulation that was wrong then.
Mm.
I made the big mistake getting a French doctor in, of course, because it meant her own regime was put aside and we went into the unknown.
Mm. But she wasn't sort of in any way hypochondriac.
No, not at all. But obviously when somebody came to see her, they knowing that she was a little incapacitated with the stick and so on, you always said, you know, how are you? But she didn't dwell on it for very long. Usually said, well, she got a bit of pain or something.
What was her daily routine, Mrs. Blake? I mean, how would she spend her days?
Well, she always got up and went to her desk. She reckoned to spend 2 hours there. And first thing she did, of course, was she was in this twisting chair. She kept the whiskey in the cupboard, so she would swing herself round and get into her cupboard, pour herself a large whiskey, and then settle down to her desk work. And then she'd swing back again and have a second one before lunch. That was plenty of routine. She read the paper from cover to cover.
Telegraph.
It was usually done in the mornings before she got up.
And she also read the business magazines.
Because
she was very printing world and things
that.
She was very well up on all the things that were going on.
Right up to the end.
Right up to the end. She used to read all the various trade magazines that she'd always had when she was at Sheridan.
And the director.
And she knew everything that was going on because I'd come along here and see her and she'd talk about something. Well, I've read in the printing world, or you know, so-and-so is retired. Do you remember old so-and-so? He's retired now.
Mm-hmm.
And of course it's that and the other. And she kept herself very much up to the present day and what was going on in the business world that she'd known before.
Well, of course she's an avid reader.
But she took it in.
It was one of our travels down in France. There wasn't adequate reading matter and really upset her.
What sort of things did she read, actually?
Well, she loved the autobiographies. She loved,
did she?
Yes. She never read fiction in any form.
Mm.
I think mostly autobiographies.
Mm.
Would she get from libraries? Would she
well, read? She used to get them from library here, yes. And of course, she's got a large bookcase herself.
I can say there are quite a lot of them.
Yes, so that she had that. She certainly ran out of literature in France because the books were so awful there.
But when would she get up then, Mrs. Blake?
Well, she used to get up. A nurse came every morning at 9:30. On the dot, and she had to be out by 10:30, so she was up and dressed by 10:30.
Mm.
And on Sunday she was a little later because the nurse probably didn't come in that day.
Mm.
Not after I'd retired, because I was here, and so that wasn't necessary.
So then she had 2 hours at her desk, which would take you till, well,
half past 12, and there was lunchtime.
Okay. Then lunchtime, then would she have a rest?
I always went back and listened to the woman's hour.
Did she really?
Mm-hmm. On her bed.
Did she? That was simply to rest, really.
Mm.
Yes, I see.
Mm.
And then what?
Switched on to women's hour with a book in her hand.
There you are, that's her feminine
yes,
side.
Yes,
that is
and well
yes,
up.
Yes, yes.
Mm.
Well, it kept her informed, too, about what was going on in the women's.
Well, I think that was her. She loved being informed, and that's why she loved having people here so much, because anybody who came was...
Keep her in touch
with all things that were going on. Yes.
Well, then she got up for tea.
Yes.
And Mary was around. And start looking in the news. Very, very anxious always about the news. Took a great interest in what was going on.
She watched television, did she?
Oh, yes, yes.
Mm.
Oh, yes, you wouldn't miss the news.
Mm. And then dinner.
And then dinner.
What about the with whiskey, and would she be having, I mean, obviously, this won't be repeated in the thing, but I mean, she would carry on with the whiskey.
Yeah, that usually came in about 5:30.
I see. She'd had 2 in the morning, she had another one 5:30.
And then another about 6. Maybe another one about 6:30. It all depended.
And she knew this was a weakness, did she? I mean, she sort
of... No, she didn't regard it as a weakness, she regarded it as
something she liked doing.
It was an essential. For myself. For my circulation. I must get my circulation.
Said with a sort of twinkle
in the
eye. Yes,
because sometimes the nurse had to bring the whiskey down in the forehopper stand.
Did they try to get her off it at all? I mean,
No. Well, I would try in an economical sense. I would try and get it cut down a little bit.
But it wasn't that much, really.
No, but she said, no. It was absolutely essential.
She's rather like Winston Churchill in that.
And
then it's not necessary to keep her going.
But it did keep her going.
Anyway, she had dinner then, here again, presumably.
Yes.
And then when did she go to
bed?
Well,
it depends what was on then. Mm. And sometimes we played games.
Mm.
I'm not a great game player, but I sometimes play Scrabble with her. We used to, in the old days, play Canasta a lot. And latterly, before we left in France, we were playing backgammon.
Maybe because that's a fashionable game.
Yes. I must say, I've left them all there. Mm. We took out backgammon with us. We took out a great many games. Unless she was interested in...
She loved her gambling.
Did she?
Oh, yeah.
What did... I mean, on horses or...
Monte Carlo. Yes, that was one of the reasons. I think she went to the South of France. She used to love going along.
When I first knew her, and she invited me out to her flat in Montauk. Now, Marion was recovering from this accident, so she couldn't walk, she said. She really couldn't walk. She managed to walk just to the hairdressers once a week. But at 3:05, she had a black cape in those days and a berry. On went the black cape and the berry, and she was off. And on the doorstep, she met Mrs. Sullivan.
Sorry.
And the two of them got in first into the casino, where they remained at 7:00 and closed down for the session. She did that every day. Now, she went across the street and felt, if you were to take a walk, she could not walk.
Oh, no, I always knew that she liked her gambling. She never made any secret of that.
She did exactly what she wanted to do. She couldn't walk across it. She wasn't interested in walking.
When you played backgammon with her or whatever, did she like winning? I mean,
yes, she did. You know, you let her win sometimes because I felt she liked it.
She wouldn't have thanked you if she knew.
So anyway, I mean, depending what was on, but anyway, she had dinner, and then she might play a game or something, then she'd go to bed, what, sort of 10:30 at some time? Or
yes.
Or would she, was she
all
late?
No, we'd go before that very often. Very often we'd go at 9:30, maybe.
What about sort of, I mean, I don't quite know what she was like when you were here earlier, but did she like the theatre or going out to concerts or anything like that?
No, she wasn't terribly keen on concerts.
Mm.
She liked going to the theatre. We used to go occasionally. But again, we had this trouble about
getting into the seats and
getting
with
the
her.
Seats and things. So you had to be careful about it. Again, she went in the grand manner, of course. Everybody was happy to stand up when she came in. Certainly in the rows.
I can imagine her making her entrance.
Wherever it was, she made her entrance.
Did she have a lot of friends? I mean, did she have a lot of people coming in?
She had a lot of friends. Really? And down in France, she had a lot of friends.
Did she?
Right up the last day, she had 3 or 4 people in the afternoon on this Monday. Didn't you?
No, I won't have any sugar.
You don't need a spoon then?
No, I don't. Thank you. That's splendid. Right. Thank you very much.
I put milk in.
That's splendid. That's just
Did you want milk in?
Yes.
It doesn't matter. You haven't put very much.
I think I'm going to see now. I think they're pouring out the tea.
But what sort of people did she like? I mean, was it business people? Or
oh, no. She liked any sort of person.
Yeah.
Anyone who was interesting.
Yes.
Mm. And especially, very often, somebody who was doing something that she didn't know a lot about, you know. Mm. If she learnt something by it, she was very interested.
Well, I knew people. She could make friends.
Mm.
In one case in particular, this was before I retired, but she used to go across the road very often for her lunch, because we didn't have Mary then. And she'd go across to the Italian restaurant there, and she'd make friends. Well, this particular friend she made, an American woman, she writes, well, even now I've got a card from her, came from France. She's a professor in this, that, and the next thing in some grand university in America. And you see, immediately they had interests, and she'd bring everything out of her, and she'd get everything out.
Mm.
And this is the sort of contact. She was able to get through to people so quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Parents of people would never be able to contact them at all.
Yeah.
She could.
I can understand that, because she got through to me. I mean, purely as a casual person meeting for an hour or so. I mean, she, you know, I really did rather take to her.
Yes.
Why did you take to her there? Because she took an interest in what you were doing. She was interested in knowing.
Well, partly because she was so kind as to give me a cup of tea and that sort of thing. I mean, more elementary things like that.
Yeah.
But partly because she had a sort of sense of humour, really, and a sort of twinkle in her eye, and really sort of rather.
I think that's the thing that keeps on sticking out, that twinkle in the eye.
Yes,
you know.
Yes, I think that's partly it. But
like
partly, as I was saying earlier, she was very shrewd. I mean, lot of these women, older suffragettes I've seen, are nice in their way, but rather silly politically. But she was all there politically.
Oh, yes.
That's why they relied on her so much. I mean, what they do now without her, the few that are left.
Do you remember, then this ought to be off the record, I think, when there was that, those rather nasty rumours about Mr. Wilson and his secretary, and she took absolutely life in that. I always remember coming along to see her, and the minute I got in the door, she said to me, Betty, what do you think about this? Is there anything in it? And she said she'd heard all about it, you know, the various people who were talking about it. She knew all about it.
Yes.
You know, I don't think she'd been outside. She's terribly amused about that.
Yes.
Well, when you say she was sort of not practical about household things, was it just cooking or was it everything? I mean, was it sort of cleaning?
Well,
the general arrangements of the house.
Well, she had no interest in that, in her own sense. I mean, she's not domesticated like I am.
Mm.
She wouldn't get up in the morning and say, well, I think I ought to change this room round a bit and put, you know, it looked better this way or that way. She accepted absolutely everything.
Mm.
And she never saw that a utility furniture, for example, was really nice one to me.
Mm.
It was quite happy.
And she'd leave all that side of things to you and Mary, would she really? I mean, she wouldn't be involved in that at all.
No.
On the other hand, then, I suppose...
Oh, she loved it to be right.
I was going to say, if she'd been left on her own and if she'd had no one to do it for her, I think she possibly would have got down and done something about it.
Yeah, I can't see her doing
that. Didn't you? But I don't think... I mean, supposing the house... She had no one in and it got very dusty and dirty.
Oh, no, she'd bring in plenty of people to do that. I mean...
Yes, but supposing she couldn't have found anyone to do it, I think she would have done something about it.
Do you really?
Yes, I think she would, because I think she was pretty fussy. I mean, she wouldn't have lived in a pigsty.
No, she wouldn't have done it, I can't think.
She might have moved out into a hotel or something.
That is what she would have done.
Yes, yeah.
She would have moved out.
But she's always been in a position to bring on somebody, hasn't she? I mean...
Oh, yes, she had a storage system working before I retired, you see. She'd have Mr. Jones downstairs cooked her breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
And then he washed up.
Well, she relied on
him. Is that the good caretaker? Right?
Yes. He did all the washing up.
He did quite a lot for her, actually.
Yes, at one time his wife did the chores. And then she'd have a friend come in the evening, probably bring in something. And they'd mess about and they'd all cook her. No, 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 she was the one just sat back and let it all work. It just worked like that.
But your point is that if she had to, she might have...
She possibly would have moved out to
a hotel.
Yes, but supposing she hadn't been able to. I mean, supposing she'd been stuck here and so on.
I guarantee you she would have said, I've gone because my bride Cassie.
But she is such a sensible, practical person in a way, isn't she? Mm-hmm. That one feels she had it in her if she really had
to. Oh, she wanted to. She would have done. But as it was, she was always acute.
Way back many, many years, she used to lay the table. And she knew when things were not properly done.
Mm.
In fact, now and again, I can look back many years when she'd come in and help with washing up in the kitchen when we didn't have anyone. You know, sometimes I'd come along with somebody.
Oh, she was quite capable of doing it, and she did it very well. I should think everything she did was done well. You know, if you can't do it properly, don't bother to do it.
Yes, yes. Did she like shopping?
Oh, no. Never.
I can't imagine her doing it.
And then poor Lamb, she had to shop. But I used to take her in the car and she used to... Well, she liked shopping in certain areas. She loved King's Road.
Mm.
And she saw people. And that gave a great deal of amusement. But I used to take her long shopping. Of course, when we were outside. Oh, no, she couldn't bear shopping.
She'd be much more likely to phone up a store and give her order over the phone and ask them to deliver it.
Yes, indeed. Oh, yes.
Well, because that's the way people went on. Even my mother, who was not at all, used to do that.
Of course. Of course we did.
But
right after the war, we did.
But it's partly sort of specialisation, that she's the expert in managing the firm and running that sort of thing. Other people are experts in their various things, making breakfast or doing shopping or whatever it may be, and then everyone does their thing.
Mm. They do their thing.
Yes, they gave her more time to do her thing.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm. And once she'd broken her arm, well, that was it.
So did she, I mean, she didn't sort of like strolling through Harrods or anything like that,
no.
I mean, sort of, or looking at dresses in
shops.
Oh,
No, not at all. No,
I don't think she would have gone out looking for dresses because she had a very, she was very aware of what she liked to wear and what suited her.
Very,
and so she would have just given her instructions to the dressmaker, as Anne says, you know, I want this and I want that, but... I don't think she would have gone into Harrods or anywhere.
Well, I do remember taking her into the Acrosecutor once. And we both bought a coat.
Well, their tailored things were more her style, really.
And we were very pleased with her. And we came out, the car had gone. And just put in a pound. And I don't know, you see, she was completely resourceful. I lost my hair. I didn't even know what to do. So we... stood around looking for a taxi, which was non-existent. So she said, well, we'll just go down to the Regent Palace Hotel and we'll ask for a taxi from the man. And you know, she was quite here then.
That would fit absolutely, wouldn't it? Yes.
Yeah.
But in a way, I mean, this whole style of living where you send out for people to do various things you want doing, that's on the whole gone out, hasn't it? I mean, you can't get people to do things on the whole. Did she ever feel this, and did she feel, I mean, what I'm really getting around to is, did she feel that things were going in directions she didn't like?
Well, I think she was rather protected.
She never said so, did she?
No.
Yeah.
I think I rather protected her from all these places.
Because in a way, English life and English society has gone in directions that aren't like that at all now, and everybody does everything for themselves, and... You don't have servants, and you know, you fend for yourself, really. But she, as you say, I mean, in a sense, she never had to, in a sense, she never really felt this because you were her shield against it.
Mm.
In a way.
Mm.
Yes.
Mm.
I can believe that. Course,
and she had, no, I was going to say, she had that dominating feature that people still went on doing it.
Of course they did.
You know, if she says jump to a chappie and to somebody else, he might. Turn round and made a rude sign. He did it for her because she had that air about her that it had to be done. And there are certain people like that.
I agree. I mean, it wouldn't inspire resentment, even though that manner of behaviour was so out of date, in a sense.
Yeah, because she captured everybody. She captured the attention. She became the centre part. It didn't matter where he went or what part he went to. And I can take this back to Christmas Day when we were here alone and her dressmaker said, why not come to us for Christmas Day? And we did, to my astonishment. Manning was quite keen to go. And there they had a large sort of family party of Italians, because he lives with an Italian, this chap, and he's a restaurateur. And it was a real sort of family party, and Marion was immediately the centre. And she made the whole day, immediately. She could get the heart of each one of them.
Yeah.
And mums and things.
Well, I was just thinking that, because in a way she could be like a little girl, couldn't she?
Yes.
Couldn't she? There was that, I think that's possibly what made her lovable in a way, that she still had this lovely
sort of zest.
Yes, and also a childlike zest, as you say, and she could enjoy things as a little girl.
It,
yes.
Mm.
Yes, she'd never lost her art of enjoying things.
Mm.
And she really did. She looked like a little girl sometimes. Although she was sort of so grown up in other ways.
The caretaker down here, I think I met him, didn't I?
Jones, yes.
When I came.
Yes.
That he used to come up and do things for her as well.
Yes,
he?
Indeed.
Yes.
Yes, he used to do all the washing.
Didn't he bring the newspapers or something?
Oh, yes, he still does. And
yes.
Then he brought all the news, and he cooked the breakfast.
Mm.
Even when I retired, he went on cooking the breakfast until we got Mary.
Mm.
So that... she had that system working, and I wasn't the one to break it.
No, I mean, she had this extraordinary capacity for creating systems around her, which, you know, enable her to sort of live in this grand manner, even though nobody else does nowadays. I mean, it's extraordinary sort of ability. I wish I had it.
I know.
He had quite a good relationship with her, though, didn't he? Because
he
used to tell her
when you end the step. One step out of pace, otherwise he got completely dressed down. But
he used to go quite near sometimes, I think.
Oh, very,
yes. She's almost like Queen Victoria and
Brown.
Almost, I would say.
Oh, yes, but
yes.
Then you see, I mean, one or two times she had form. You know, it was Jones who had to come.
Who picked her up.
And in fact, you know, before I came up, she had a very serious fall. And, Jim said, well, madam, if you don't mind, I would like to ask a mate of mine to come in, you see. And so the mate and he put a sheet down and got it underneath. And they lifted her up by that. And she said, Jim, Jones, now how did you think of that? Well, he said, I once saw a horse fall.
She'd enjoy that, wouldn't she?
She loved it.
She probably told everybody else too. Yes, that would amuse her.
She was quite proud of that picture, actually. I remember her pointing it out
indeed.
To me.
She left it to me too, I know.
Yes, I mean, did she see much of her relatives? I mean,
indeed, she did. She had an awful lot to do with them.
Did she?
Yes, because in the end, you know, they were up there in Sunderland.
Mm.
I took her last year to the house where she was born. And I have some very good snaps taken up the house.
I remember you said that you'd been there.
Yeah, I don't know where they are, but they're there, the house where she was born.
Mm.
And then she had to have Mum and Dad down in Dulwich. And there was never any reason why I thought, well, perhaps he's retired, you know, come down there. But evidently, and that's her grandmother in the middle.
So she had quite a strong sort of family attachment, you think.
I think the three boys are all Brown or killed.
But anyway, you felt that she always felt, in fact she's not on that.
No, she wasn't born then.
No, she always felt the youngest child and rather a drag on the elder one.
Well, yes, I said, oh my, have we got to take her?
Yes.
And, you know, she had this little feeling, latterly, that if she was left out, and I always made a point that I didn't go anywhere without taking her, because I didn't want her to feel she was being left behind. Oh my, must we take her?
The fifth child.
Yes. That's rather sad in a way, isn't it? Of course, you come round to a circle in your life, don't you, on the whole?
Yes.
The attitude you had as a child come back when you're older again.
Well, they do, don't they? Yes.
I wouldn't think she had any reason to sort of feel left out or anything, because she proved herself in a way better than the other four, didn't she?
Yes, indeed. But if she'd been a very sensitive child, this very fact, I know it would have happened to me if my brothers had said, oh my, must we take her? I should have immediately felt terribly inferior.
Yes. But well, then she set out to prove that she wasn't.
Yes, well
yes, I mean,
that was her reaction.
Well, yes, one could do a lot of rather crude psychologism about that.
And she was exactly the same as a child she was when she grew up, because she would not wear a thing if she didn't want to. She just refused. And as a child, she would refuse to put on a dress if she wasn't exactly the one she wanted to wear. So in that way, she was the same. I see, no, no, you must put that on today.
Did she talk much about her parents to you?
No, not an awful lot, you know. There was a little dark cloud somewhere on the horizon there.
I mean, in a way, you both come into her life really quite late on, I suppose, haven't you?
Well, I've only known her 22 years, but I have known the very personal side.
Of course you have, yes.
Very
but in a way, you can't sort of exchange with her memories of her parents at all.
No.
So I suppose she wouldn't naturally mention them.
No, I knew her sister.
I suppose the person now, even I think he saw it in Mrs. Prance and so on, but even
no, Mrs. Prance when you were talking. I know exactly the moment Mrs. Prance came into her life, because I was there. It was a cocktail party down in Malta. And then she came in as a housekeeper.
Yes, now who else was there? There were the people where she had the house down at Hoe. She had four winds down there.
Oh, well, she sold that.
Yes, of course. I remember her when she had that. Because they four of them built this house, you know, and they all had a wing, and they called it Four Winds, with a sort of central sitting room.
What went on at Montan then, Mrs. Blake? She went there every winter, did she?
No, she didn't. And as a matter of fact, if I'd only had wit, I should remember that the last several times she went to Montan, she always had bronchitis. And in those days she had a flat in Montan.
What, rented or...?
No, she had it. She rented it.
I see.
Whatever you do in France, she did. And then she gave that up. And she continued to go back to Montan, to the Hotel Westminster, which was the hotel there, and where she gave her parties for the English colony. Well, every time, under my knowledge, she got bronchitis. And the last time, although I wasn't there, she came the nurse out with her. She came back, desperately ill.
That was last winter, was it?
No. That's several years ago.
Oh, I see.
But in the last several years, we've gone to the Hotel de Paris in Monte Carlo. We have only gone for a month, and she's been fine.
Which month, actually, December or?
Usually in January. Or maybe sometimes in December or a little late November, out of season, this was cheaper. And then we were back. But this time, you see, we took a flat in 3 months. And it still didn't dawn on me that, you know, these French doctors spent.
Must have been something about the air that didn't agree with her to give her the bronchitis.
Yeah, I mean, one would have thought one would get away to the south of France for one's health. I mean, in the winter,
it's a treacherous part, you know, because suddenly there was this awful wind from Russia. Even the femme de ménage had a terrible cold, and she'd only just been standing at the bus stop or something and got it. about the same time Sharon started a little cough. But when I got the doctor to her, who prescribed this, that, and the next thing, which cut across her own regime, I think that probably her little arteries were a bit too thin to take the change.
Mm. Mm.
She had a regime, did she? Which
well, yes, we always kept, you know, she'd take enormous lot of hypnotics. Mm. She always did. She always managed her own drugs.
Mm.
She knew exactly what she was doing.
She must have had a very strong constitution, actually.
Oh, very strong.
With the drugs and the whiskey as well, and the general.
And 8 Panadine a day, regularly.
Mm.
Well, she had a tremendously strong constitution.
Mm. Mm. Anyway, she got bronchitis again.
But she wasn't ill with it in the same sense as she has been before. The doctor said, no, she mustn't stay in bed. So she got up, but she wanted to. And he'd been in the morning, and this when he said that he'd be back in 3 days. So you can imagine, he was a lot perturbed.
Mm.
And half an hour later, she was dead.
I see. She just died sort of in bed.
No, we were in the bathroom.
Did she?
And I tried to hold her up, she couldn't talk to me.
Mm.
And I said, keep breathing.
Mm.
In and out. And I could feel her breathing in and out.
Well, that's a good way to go. Really.
Mm.
I mean,
She was saying what she was going to do.
Yes.
Yes, I think that.
So
that
I never got to the stage when I said, "No, you're not getting up today."
Yes.
It never came to that.
Well, that's what she would have liked.
I should say, I'm sure that's what she would have wished
to
not to be incapacitated to any extent. And
oh no, I think she, you know, by the look on her face that morning, she was so clear-eyed and so...
Mm.
She certainly didn't expect it.
She didn't, you might say she was almost anticipating a good day.
Mm.
Yes. Mm. Did she, why did she go to France? Partly for health reasons, I suppose.
Oh, well, it is always preferable to go to a climate that suits you if you've got a little bronchitis, and also I am delicate, and it's preferable that I should. And if you're shut up in a sort of flat like this, there's very little you can do about it in the winter.
It's nice to have a change.
And
isn't it?
I mean, pots from going down and over this and that. She loved the South of France. She loved Morton. She had lots of drives and she had a beautiful room. She had beautiful views and the most beautiful garden. So that.
And her casinos and so on.
Yes, and
her
she was
casinos,
very happy.
Yes. Was she partly French, do you think? I mean, did she like the French? I mean, in the sense of feeling happier.
No, I think she liked the idea that she had been a French resident. She liked to identify herself with France.
She liked the idea of the South of France.
And she loved the idea of the South of France.
It was part of the whiskey and the good living, really,
yes,
isn't it? I mean,
she used to go.
Well, I mean, when she became, I remember the time when she became the French emigre. I think she liked the idea of spending 6 months in England and
yes,
then 6 months in the South of France. You know, it sounded very grand.
Yes,
and
this is it. She liked that.
Yes,
grandeur.
Yes.
She had a sense of grandeur.
Mm. Yes, I think she did. I'm sure that.
I mean, that rather reflects in the clothes, because you say she loved wearing a cloak and so on.
Oh, yes.
I mean, something was flowing and almost in a way like an artist, wasn't it? You know, Gustus John type of
wear. Yes, rather romantic, dramatic.
Yes, flamboyant. And
yes.
Yes.
Romantic and dramatic,
yes. Mm. She spoke French very well, did she? I mean,
well, she always had a niece in my town which insisted on reading to me every morning.
Mm.
And
in French or English?
In French.
Did she?
Yes. Oh, she did.
But I imagine she would speak French with a very English accent. I don't know if that's right.
Yes, indeed she did. She did. She didn't make any bones about that. I speak French with an English accent.
Mm.
I think she was always prepared to improve her French. She was always out for learning and getting
broadening
the bottom of things, where I was side over the whole thing.
She She didn't happily like wasting time. I mean, as you say, when she went out to France, if she was going to do anything, she'd improve her French and so on.
She
had
a desk and she went and did her desk work. She wrote a few postcards and things.
It's possibly like sitting out in the sun occasionally, but mainly with somebody she could chat to at the same time. So that you
she had all that there. So she, in this sense, her last 3 months were very happy ones. But she had people popping in.
She made friends, quite a lot of friends out there.
Well, she had quite a lot of friends out there.
Mm. Mm. But that's nice.
And she had a friend in the same block, which was the one who really encouraged her to come out to this mansion, in a very famous garden. And she had this ground floor veranda flat. But actually, the veranda was just a bit too cool for her, although the sun was brilliant. The air was a little bit sharp, and I think this is probably why she started the car.
Still, I mean, you at that age, you might well get anything anywhere. My German is just one of those.
I'd rather have her here.
Oh yes, yes. But I mean, I feel somebody says somewhere, well, now's your time to go, you go wherever you are, whatever you're doing. You know, I mean, you're just going to catch something.
You know, as far as you were saying, you should have come back earlier, and I don't think it would have made very much difference because she could just as easily have got a touch of bronchitis here.
Well, she did, of course.
That's
really
what
I mean. Before we went away, she had.
Yeah.
In November, she had bronchitis.
And it could have just as easily have happened here as it did out there. It was just unfortunate.
That's
you were in a sort of stranger place. Yeah. But I think at that age, and as she'd had these sort of operations and things, that might have been a strain on the heart when it was
and
done.
The weight too.
Yes, yes, the weight could have helped.
Weight.
But I mean, to have an operation, you say she was possibly 76 or 77, but it was quite a long operation.
About 77, I think.
She had been ill, hadn't she, shortly before I came to see her the first
time. Yes, indeed. Yes, she was having these little illnesses. So the fact that she was having another little illness didn't deter me because she was much more lively in the south of France than she was having little illnesses here.
Yes.
You know, she was the first one to say, no, I'm not getting up today.
Mm.
And yet the day she died, she said, no, I'm going to sit up.
What about that, Mrs. Blake? I remember you saying you had it between you. Because she liked to sleep with the light on. I think that's right.
That's right. Yes. I'm sorry. Yes,
well,
I remember that.
Does that actually mean anything in her life? I mean, was she a religious person?
No, she wasn't.
Probably not.
She wasn't agnostic. And funnily
enough, Christine Morel was, of course.
Yes, she went. The last Sunday we were here, we went to the church across the way.
Mm.
And just happened that she was dressed about 10:30, as usual.
Mm.
And we had staying with us Dr. Hunt, who always went across the chapel. And I said, well, why don't we all go? So we all went.
Mm.
And I was very glad to be able to recall this to the vicar's mind when I was discussing the memorial service.
Yes.
With him.
Yes.
She had been.
Yes. So
she was a Christian at large. I mean, nobody could have been more Christian.
Oh yes, I mean it's a matter of temperament in a way, isn't it?
Things.
Yeah. She'd help individuals.
Oh, she helped individuals.
Yes.
Well, I think she was a very Christian person, and the fact that she didn't attend church every week doesn't mean a thing. I mean, one lives one's life to be a Christian
very
without
jealous.
Sort of showing that one is.
Yeah, never saying.
She did actually get out, did she, quite a lot? I mean,
I
was wondering how far her illness and so on prevented her from moving out of the flat.
Oh, not at all, because only exactly a week before we'd been to Nice to see a friend of.
I see, yes.
And less than that, we'd been out to lunch about 5 days before, and she said, now that's a meal that I really did enjoy. It's not of my frozen beans. And she loved going out.
Yes.
Loved restaurants. She loved to see people.
Yes.
Given the
Do you think that might have been a bit of teasing, though, Anne? She's a great teaser.
No, I don't think that. I think she meant this.
But she could tease, couldn't she? That's where the twinkle came out again.
She could
say something, and you think
she
was
getting a little bit there must have been something going on then.
Yeah.
About those.
Yeah.
Taking a version of French beef.
Was she surprised, do you think, at living so long? I mean, did she ever talk about her age a lot?
I think she was beginning to think she was dicing, you know, fate a bit. And I was getting round to the point of saying, well, you know, do try to get your age. Because she was meeting for the first time some friends who had been recommended by friends of ours here, and they had called, and she was getting on famously, and they were absolutely excited by her. So everybody was excited by her. And I came in, she said, now this is the time I tell them my age.
She had,
but then she was slightly put out because then the conversation turned to
turned away from her age.
So she said, "I'm just getting on very well until you came."
But she wasn't sort of waiting for the Queen's telegram or anything like that.
Oh no,
I mean,
no. She, I think each time she thought this was, you know,
I think she would have liked it.
Well, I'm sure she would. There would have been a party, wouldn't
yes,
there?
Yes, oh yes. She had a terrific party on her 90th birthday. Yes, that was really the time when she started telling everyone how old she
was.
Once she'd made 90, she thought she'd done extremely well. Of course, everybody told her she didn't look 90, which she didn't.
No, she didn't.
I mean, she looked fantastic, and she was terribly proud of the fact. And because I remember coming along here, and she said to me, "Betty, do you know how old I am?" And I said, "Well, yes, as a matter of fact, I do. I always have done." You know, I'm 99.
Yes.
But I never let her know before that I knew how old she was.
I think, in a way, it's such a pity that people do know their ages, because I think it has an effect on one's life.
Mm.
You see, if she hadn't known she was 94...
she would have behaved like a 74-year-old.
Well, exactly.
Mm.
I feel.
Mm. Yes, I agree. I mean, you're as old as you feel, aren't you?
Yes.
To some extent. She never felt 94.
No, she
didn't. Oh, no. But do you think she acted, you know...
No, she didn't act as though she never felt, but it's, you know, you've got in your mind.
You think she might have stopped occasionally and thought, maybe I ought not to do that because I'm 94?
No,
I don't know.
She didn't.
Thought
no,
she
no,
did.
No, she didn't. No, in fact, she was carrying on.
Yes. No, I think she was just rather pleased with herself that she looked the way she did, and the fact that, you know, she was something out of the ordinary, as she'd always wanted to be.
Mm.
She'd made her way in a man's world, being female, and now she'd got to 94, and she didn't look 94.
Mm.
And she was still completely in command of her faculties. I mean, her memory, just a few things she forgot, but on the other hand, she remembered a lot of things. I remember coming here and seeing her once, and she said to me, "Do you remember so-and-so?" And in the sort of... she had one of those minds, and she was sort of filing cabinet mind, and she could put her memories into it. And she was something, when I first joined the firm, that she remembered, "Do you remember you did so and so?" And I thought, golly, no, did I? And it suddenly came back to me, "Yes, you did." And I said, "Gracious, fancy you remembering that far back, with all the other things that must have been going on." But I can't even remember now what it was, but it was possibly something that tickled her as a... I was sort of a young kid to her, and something I did, and she thought it was very funny, and she stored it away.
I think she stored everything.
Yeah. What did she like watching on television? You say news broadcast, really, wasn't it?
It was a late programme.
Oh, yes. You mean news at 10 or...?
No, half past 11.
Oh, yes, yes. It's late as that.
It was very unfortunate, because a lot of people missed it. It's very good, yes. And she had a tremendous interview, you see, with these people.
Oh, sorry, my wires are crossed with you. You mean she was actually on television?
Yes.
Oh, when was that?
After the Shoulder to Shoulder.
Oh, you know, was she? I didn't know that.
The exact week after.
I see.
It was a commentary on the programme. And, she had a tremendous time here. We had a great tea party. And that Lord... what's his name here?
Lord Brockway.
Brockway,
yeah.
Kenneth Brockway.
Mm.
My dear. His dear.
Because that would be a new experience.
And they were very impressed by her. They wanted to do more of her. And they were terribly sorry. It was cut down to about 15 minutes. But a lot of people missed that program.
Well, I did, because I'd seen some of the shoulder to shoulder, and I was very surprised, because I came along here and said, I thought you ought to be on the programme. She said that I was.
Yes.
You couldn't have stayed up late enough to see it, which
Of course, from her point of view, shoulder to shoulder was all wrong, in the sense that the Women's Freedom League didn't get any publicity in it at all, did it?
None at all.
I mean, did she...
But I don't think they were meaning to do that, because...
Oh, no, they just didn't
I think
know
it was the militancy
it.
That they were emphasising.
Yes, precisely.
But it was a pity, in a way, because, I mean, there's so much militancy today, that really, I felt slightly ashamed of some of the things they did.
No, I agree. I mean, I think that... her side of the movement was always a civilised, rational, business-like approach to women's rights, rather than the sort of flamboyant, hysterical that you got from Mrs. Pankhurst, which got some way, but didn't get all the way.
Well, I suppose they needed that as a start to get people interested.
Well, I think that's true.
But I certainly couldn't imagine Marion flinging herself underneath a horse at the Derby or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
She'd have been far too sensible for that.
Sure, that's right.
Apart from the fact that she probably might have had some money on one of the horses or something.
And this gambling, it was just a sort of sense of fun, more than a sense of excitement, really.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Well, she obviously didn't need the money.
Oh,
no,
it didn't become... She just liked
just
the idea.
Yeah.
Was it a challenge, wasn't it? It was another challenge to see if she could prove that she could win something or not.
Yes.
And of course, she was a member again at Crockford's.
Was she really?
Yes.
Did she go to Crockford's?
Yes, she went occasionally. But, you know... well, I was also a member, but I was quite keen, so I'm not keen on losing money, and I'm not terribly keen on... I like winning, of course. One occasion, we both of us won £100 at Monte Carlo. So when we were staying in the Hotel de Paris, we could go underground. We didn't have to come out to the hotel. And so we both went and had a suit made. We all had Taylor had come grandly to the hotel. We both came back with a suit on our money. It was great fun. We enjoyed that. It's one of those days you just couldn't do anything wrong.
Did she go about, when she was travelling around, did she go around in a wheelchair then? I suppose she did.
No. We installed her and got onto a wheelchair in the Hotel de Paris because they had front steps. It's very difficult for her to come down. Mm. And long passages. So we got a wheelchair, and I used to push along to the goods lift, and then call them down, and down she went down the goods lift, which meant that she could get straight into the car on that level.
I see.
That worked very well.
Yeah.
And of course, she always had an airport, but otherwise I wouldn't allow her a wheelchair, because I said, no wheelchairs.
Mm.
Because, you know, you have to use your legs, otherwise you wouldn't soon get off.
How did, I'm presuming they all greeted her, did they, as an annual visitor, did they at the Hotel de Paris? I mean,
yes, indeed.
She
yes.
must have been again arriving in style.
Yes.
But, you know, I mean.
Oh, yes, she's got very well known there.
Mm.
And indeed, this time we went to the Hotel de Paris, and of course the commissionaires all bowed down and greeted her.
Mm.
And,
which she enjoyed.
Oh, she enjoyed all that.
Well, she had a presence, didn't she? I mean, if she went anywhere once, I shouldn't think anyone would have forgotten the next time she went. They would know her. I mean, a lot of people...
Yeah.
I could possibly go somewhere once, and the next time, you might say, do you remember me? Oh, yes, I do. But I don't think she'd have to have done that.
No.
It was the presence. She was large. I think that must have helped a bit, Anne, you know.
Yes, I'm sure that is true. I mean,
she had this sort of grand presence. If she'd been smaller, she would... And sticks, and the dark glasses, and possibly a cloak and so on.
Yes.
And it was quite a presence. I think if she'd been smaller, she would...
But you need just that little exercise.
Oh, yes, you need...
I mean, she had the right way of getting straight through the person, sort of...
I mean, she'd strike up particular relationships with individuals, wouldn't she?
Yes, but she remembered something about them.
Yes,
well, she had an air of authority.
Yes,
didn't
and
she?
Bring that out
yes.
so that they all became
yes.
friends.
Yes.
Oh, it is very sad in this down there. They were very, very sad indeed. And as I say, this one count went quite berserk and rushed into the Miss Rattan. And this wonderful person. Well, the next day I went into a restaurant hadn't been in it before. It was most extraordinary. It's a very old man sitting there. And so we asked for a drink. It was after Mary was dead. And he said, the founder of the suffragettes died here in Moncton, he said, yesterday. Oh, I said, you know, I don't think probably it was the founder, you know, I think it was. Oh, yes, he said it was. That was her name before she got married. He was 89 and he spoke English, and he'd been waiter and everything else at Frascati's.
Oh, really?
And the Trocadero and everything else was an office to him. Most interesting fellow. But he got
what is going into this?
Nothing was going to put him off there. I just saw it.
What a coincidence, though. He must have known her at Frascati's, or she used Dad an awful lot.
Yes.
So, rather funny, yeah.
One thing I meant to ask her, actually, I was, if she originally going to come and see her again, because I saw her twice, and she very kindly said she agreed to see me once again when she came back from south of France. Of course, that could never happen.
Yes, it was a pity we hadn't done it just then.
In a way, in retrospect, but I mean,
yes.
How would one know? But I was going to ask her what happened to her in the Second World War. I know she was quite active in various ways in the First World War, but... do you happen to know what she got up to in the Second World War, if anything special? I mean,
well, didn't she? She was in civil defence.
Yes, she was. I think she was in the what did they call it? The ARP.
Yes, first of all, I came across a letter, you know, whereby they stopped. Was the ARP? They carrying the dead bodies. Doing something.
Yes,
she was in. Yes, you know, she was getting the bodies into sacks and things.
Mm. That would be.
Yes.
Well, I forget what.
That was this last war.
Yeah.
And then she was in civil defence. Then she went into the Home Guard.
Did she
really? So I got some photographs I came across just now of that. And I thought that's when she got her freedom.
I don't know.
I might have a record of that somewhere. Have there been any other obituaries? I mean,
she was in the City of London, you see, the Home
Yes.
Well, that would be when they
or
had...
Or civil defence, whatever you call it.
They have the office in...
Lincoln's Inn.
No, they had the office in Hatton Garden, I think, didn't they?
Yes.
Where it was bombed.
Oh, yes.
And then they moved to 48 Gray's Inn Road.
And then she went out.
And then that's right, they went out to Rickmansworth.
Mm-hmm.
And, they went out to Rickmansworth, and then they came back to...
She took over a hairdresser's shop.
Mm.
And this is how astute she was, you see. She saw this premises to let, and there was a hairdresser. And so she said she wanted it, and so she bought up her stock. She then went to her own hairdresser and said, look, I've bought up all these hairdressers and stuff. And then he went out and got the lot, you see, and so then she had her premises.
I bet she got a good terms for the stock, too.
Yes, indeed.
But this thing about the subject coach, which we were talking about actually before you came. She was the sort of queen of the suffragette fellowship, the sort of backup for Grace Rowe, was she?
Oh,
really?
Yes, indeed.
And Grace Rowe really deferred to her business.
All the time.
And
then if she had a speech to make, if Marion Lawson wrote the speech.
Was that so?
Yes, and whatever meeting, it had to be all organised by Marion Lawson.
Mm.
Of course, the meetings were very often here.
Mm. And she really ran the finances of the Suffragette Fellowship?
No, that would have been the secretary, you know, they had one or two sort of quick accidents along this line, you know, quite recently, years. The secretary got killed and ran over and somebody else got killed.
Well, that's Esther Knowles.
Esther Knowles, and they would be the treasurers.
Yes.
So I think from that side. Mm. But what she was campaigning for and trying to get was a proper... statute for this money, this legacy business that had been left, instead of letting it be in the hands of the two Baths, which were just dribbling it away on little parties once a year for their friends.
Mm.
So her idea was to have something to benefit women.
Women
in general.
In a proper manner. Mm. Instead of frittering it and saying that they wanted to have the money by them, so to help any poor suffragette. But you see, the poor suffragettes are now all the
poor. Maybe all of them anyway.
Did she? You could only call a suffragette the ones who were really active at the time.
Yes, well, I agree. I mean, a lot of people who weren't really active at all suddenly become prominent now,
in
their old age.
Yes.
But did she have any other sort of organisations like that that she advised or belonged to, or charities, or a society?
Well, of course, she had. Well, I mean, she's left 2/3 of her money to this Christian Morel memorial.
It's the
Christian Morel memorial, which was got up, which she got up.
Oh, Christine Morel, I see. Yes, you mean
Morel.
Which is that?
Well, it's to help women doctors get stopped in life. Well, of course, I don't see it's necessary now because, you know, you don't buy them like they did.
Mm.
But I know more about that when Dr. Damien Gilly comes, she's coming to the service, because she's got some active part in it, and I believe it is, it's still valuable. And then there was another Christian Morel memorial thing, which is a sort of, not a crash, but
looking after infant welfare, you mean?
Some welfare sort of. Which is up in Marlborough.
Shows how fond she was of Christine, doesn't she?
Oh, yes, indeed.
So
and she started this at her death. And then this is going to her now, the money.
I mean, I take your point that maybe this isn't the best thing to give your money to now, but nonetheless, it is interesting that she should have felt so attached to Christine.
Oh, of course. And of course, because she gave, always felt, well, she gave her
chance.
Her chance, you see.
I'm sure that must be it, that she allowed her to prove herself, and so she thought, well, in return, I'll do the same.
Yeah,
that was one of the...
the
cause is close to her heart,
so
I'll now pay her back by sort of furthering her cause.
Mm.
And that's the sort of thing she would do.
Mm.
Yeah.
Christine actually put up the money for her to become...
No, all she did was to guarantee the money. And it was never taken up, it was never necessary. She backed her.
To the tune of £4,000, if the company had... gone bust. They had a guarantee.
See, this is very interesting. Let me have a look at this because I suspect this is the letter in this biography actually. It refers to her, and also, in fact, the name's eliminated. But if you. It simply says. It's
yes,
just
the letter's outside, isn't
it? Yes, could do it.
Well, the woman could do this business activity,
yes.
Oh, well, yes, I agree. I mean, that's her achievement, it seems to me, in a way.
Yes, and then finally, of course, she sold it back to the American.
Yeah.
Well, she sold the controlling interest back.
That's right.
She still had a 49, didn't she? They had 51.
Did they?
Yes, they had 51, and she had the 49, which wasn't the controlling, and then she gave some away.
She gave it away,
She didn't have the whole 49, because I think J.Y. Finn, they had... had some of the shares, and then she gave some to me, and some to David, some to Roderick Mackenzie, who didn't, and John Waters, and so on.
One thing which I didn't obviously like to ask her, I vaguely teetered on the edge of asking her when I was there, but I didn't feel able to, was her accent. I mean, it's a most unusual accent, wasn't it? What was it? I mean, was it a northeastern accent? Or
well, it is not. She does come from
northeast. I know she does.
It's accepted. She joined the company down here when she was about 18, didn't she?
Yes,
yes, I know.
Young.
But you know, it's awfully difficult.
Do you think it's? I think it's got a little bit of an American accent.
I think
she worked very closely with C.B. Sheridan, and she and he were the only two, and I think she picked up a little bit of an American accent.
Yes, you know, it's never occurred to me to think.
I think it was. I always had the idea it was. And I think she liked the idea of people thinking it was, because it sort of
brought in
the American side.
Brought in a good sales club.
Yes.
I rather had the feeling she was a bit proud of her Anglo-American sort of
yes.
life.
Yes.
I think it's probably a lot of people America. Said, you know, she thought she was American.
Yes. It's just, it was definitely, it had a tinge of American about
yes.
it.
Mm.
Yes, that's interesting, because I wondered about that.
Mm.
Well,
she had very sort of round tones, didn't she?
Yes, unexpected ways of saying words and things, which, you know, were quite distinctive. You know, I mean, I hadn't sort of heard that accent. I couldn't quite fit in. It's probably a combination of American and Northeastern
yes.
London author.
Mm.
Did she like London, actually? I mean, was she a Londoner?
Oh, yes,
she liked London, and she liked the theatres.
Yes.
She used to go quite a lot when she was
yes.
But not, as you say, not concerts.
I think she loved being in Mond Street.
Mm.
Yes, she used to talk about the view from the corner.
Yes,
she obviously looked out quite
yes,
a lot.
She loved this, yes.
I think she liked London. I think she liked the city too, because
how sovereignty could
down
the
business
city.
World and
most interested in the Sunday.
Yeah.
See the difference.
Mm. I think she was very interested in the city.
You
she
took her out for drives, did you?
Oh, yes, that? Yes, indeed,
yeah.
Yes.
Then
very often on a Sunday we'd go around, took her around the city.
Yes.
And
yes.
Always see something different.
Yes.
Do you know,
well, we mustn't keep you, I mean, you've obviously...
The firm as such has died, you see. I don't know whether you know the story behind it, but...
I mean, it sort of became taken over.
It was
by
taken
by
over, we... When Marion was, when she retired, we were still the Sheridan Machinery Company. And then, Anne will remember this time, T.S. Clark, Theodore S. Clark, who was the president of the Sheridan American Company, who owned 51% of us, died. And then the company was at the shareholding over there was owned by various relatives of the old C.B. Sheridan and so on, and the Schneider side, weren't they, and the Sheridans, and they wanted to sell out. And so they started looking around. If Ted Clark hadn't died, I think it would have gone on as the Sheridan Company. They then had an excuse to sell out. They'd been wanting to for a long time. I think they wanted the money out of it. And so they eventually sold out to Harris Intertype. Well, Harris Intertype, although they bought the Sheridan Company, in so doing they got 51% of us, but they still hadn't got the controlling interest. Marion and a few of us were still hanging on to the other 49%. And so a chappie called old Dick somebody, do you remember him, came over, and he came along to see her, because she really was a major shareholder, and he was what I call a professional nice man. And he came along, and they offered a very, very good price for the shares. I mean, I think they were valued £6 or something, wasn't it? Yeah. They were valued at 25 shillings in those days, because we weren't metrics, 25 shillings.
Because and you got some shares and they're found.
In Harris Intertype, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But they actually bought the company out. And then they merged the Sheridan Machinery Company over here with Harris Intertype at Slough. And I left then, because I didn't want to know anymore. It wasn't the same old company. So I left, and most of the old people left. Even I say the old people, but one the people who remembered Marion there. And I think if you went down to Harris Intertype now, to the Sheridan division, I think the only person who would possibly know would be Peter Lawrence, who's the financial director down there. But a few of the others might say, oh, yes, I remember vaguely. But, you know, that's when it died, really. And that was the
And yet you carried on being a secretary after that. Being Marion's secretary?
No, I wasn't her secretary.
Work for
I used to come along and do work for her when she had no, when she wrote phone up. And then I think she used to have a few people in. But no, I just kept in contact, because she was somebody I was extremely fond of, you know, and I didn't want to lose touch with her. So I used to phone up and say, please, can I come along and see you and have a drink? We used to come along and natter about old times.
Yes, yes.
Which you continue to do.
Yeah. I really love coming to see her. It was, as I say, she was part of, she was the start of my business life, and it was a part that was very, very happy, and I just never wanted to lose it. So all the other things that happened. I always used to love coming along here, and we'd talk about old times and have a giggle about various things that happened.
Mm. So that's very nice. That's a real tribute to her, isn't it?
Mm. Oh, she was always so interesting.
Yes, well, as I say, I mean, purely on two brief encounters, I talked to her.
If you go outside, I'll give you his papers back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did she?
Yes, yes. But I think, you know, she kept things in, what she used to say, in, you must always live in compartments. Mm. So that she had a compartment for everything.
Mm.
Her business, her love life or whatever it was, and, and so on.
Mm.
So nothing would interfere with one or the other.
Very good way to do it. Yes, yes. Well, did she ever tell you that she lived in compartments? No, I think so. Yes.
Mrs. Blake was saying that she had somebody she was fond of. What was he killed in the First World
yes,
War?
Yes, he was killed in
Oh, yes. Well, I think she was engaged.
Yes, that's right.
Was
yes,
she?
To
yeah.
me.
Yes.
Mm. And she never found anyone
else.
But I think she had fun. Oh. Oh yes, I think you know she
didn't get it mixed up with business.
No, no, but I think she certainly liked men.
She did. Yeah.
I think she told me she used to she had a flat as a young woman by herself, which was a very unusual thing in those days.
Yeah.
And rather fast, as she
described. Yes. Oh yes, or you know anything like that. She loved to think that she was fast. She's probably very careful, very proper, as long as it didn't interfere with her business life.
Yes, quite.
Yes. But I mean, she had fun.
Oh, exactly, yes. Well, there was no point in working, was there? Working
yes.
hard unless you were going to enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, I think she had fun right through her life.
Mm. She enjoyed what she was doing.
Yes.
And she made it enjoyable.
Yes.
She did have this lovely twinkle when she was dealing with men anyway, and she loved. I mean, she was attractive. Well, Gilbert says this. He said right up to the end, she was still a very pretty lady. She was still very attractive, I think that's very true. She possibly was.
Well, I think she captivated the men quite honestly.
Well, if she was making up in the middle of the night, she was prepared for all eventualities.
You quite think strongly there. I think how I tumble into bed. She'd be prepared for bed.
Oh, well, Anne, if you have got these photographs, do you
help yourself? Yes.
You were saying she always had rings, weren't you?
Rings
and she
pearls.
Also had pearls.
Pearls,
yeah.
Always. I can't.
Oh, she's got gloves on there.
Yeah, I can't imagine what
yeah.
the pearls on there.
Yeah.
I was obviously down in Exeter.
Yes, she possibly couldn't get them done up or something.
Yeah.
So she's got a stick. There's the stick there.
Oh, yes.
She's got
her
drink in one hand and stick in the other.
Yeah,
the
drink.
Yeah, she hasn't got the drink
velvet,
in this one.
Velvet skirt and the satin top.
This is the brocade, yes, the brocade that you mentioned, isn't it, as well? Yes. And that's very characteristic of her as I knew her,
yes.
But of course.
Yes, I think that's very gorgeous.
Well, do let's hope something comes of it all.
Yes. When I came to her first.
Yes.
So I came in quite on my round one fine day. And then she was very soon going down to the south of France. And to my surprise, I was invited to survive 2 weeks off.
Yes.
To do this visit. I always remember having such a tremendous row with one of my patients who happened to be a prince. Because he said, no, 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 I must not go to Monton. And in fact, I could go anywhere else except Monton, which I thought was very peculiar. And in fact, I lost my prince as a result. But I was so sort of, I hadn't been in the south of France. And I was carried away with the idea. And I went. And from then onwards, we've been friends. Now, sometimes I've nursed her, and sometimes I haven't. But we've always been friends. And then in 1960, I went down to start a nursing home down in Devon. So we were separated in that way, and yet we were never separated because she became part of my life. She was sort of my mother and father, the whole thing.
And the whole purpose, seemed to me, of my being down the devil was that I had her at the center.
She was a sort of anchor, in a way.
An absolute anchor. And of course, she frequently came down to the nursing home and stayed there, and we went everywhere together. Holidays, South Africa, America, south of France. So we travelled all over the place together, and indeed in latter years she's done much, much more than she ever thought she would do. For example, last year I took her up to her family place, where she never thought that she'd ever visit again. And I have some delightful snaps, if I can find them, where she's visiting the family grave and her home where she was born, the excitement like a child, and finding it. Really, she was so well, so exhilarated by it all. Mm. And then, of course, I took her up to my hometown, up in Aberdeen, on to Inverness. And she thoroughly enjoyed the whole thing. And latterly, I took her to the Cotswolds, just prior to my breaking my arm. And there she had old suffragettes, like the
Miss Verotti,
yes, she we give her a real surprise by turning up, and Dame Anna's Gilly also there. So they were delighted. So I think they rather thought after her accident, you know, that she'd really become a fixture in Mount Street, and that was it. And she didn't really appear in public, so that all this rejuvenation was delightful.
So you started off as nurse and ended up really as companion, I suppose.
Yes.
It's a very interesting development. You never know how your life's going to turn out. Or
well, you
don't.
No,
take, do you?
You really don't, because you get so in life, you get so many choices.
Mm.
You can do so many things, and yet there seems to be a force.
I mean, that you could have made a different choice that in a way was rather attractive at that point, and you'd gone with your prince.
Of course.
And yet you would have missed all this.
Yes, but then you see there was, you have so many choices in life, but it seems that you're compelled to do one thing.
Mm.
It's something that you have no control over.
Yes, well I agree, you feel free and yet not free.
And at that time she was very down, because you know, she had a niece who came under this sort of, got into trouble.
Yeah, the solicitor niece, you mean?
Yes,
solicitor
niece. And this really pulled her right down, and she really was, as you can see, on drugs and things, but she really was very withdrawn and very, very difficult. And I somehow got her out of it. I never forced her out of it, but, you know, she got out of it.
She did get depressed sometimes.
Yes, in those very early days. She was really in probably very low health. And I think certain times she had low health. But I think this is where I came in. I came in as the force to get her out of it. And gradually through the life, she seemed to have more and more life, more and more spirit, and seemed to be rising up.
That's very encouraging, isn't it, to think that you had that effect on her. So you were a real partnership, helping one another in a way.
Yes, because I needed her help too.
Yes, it's a very happy sort of thing, isn't it, to happen like that. And Christine Morell had this partnership with Dr. Bone.
Dr. Bone, yes.
And they helped each other.
Well,
you know,
exactly, yes.
In a way it's another repetition of that.
It is. It was very much a repetition of Dr. Morell, in a way.
And Dr. Morell also.
Yes, because you see, she was very attached to Dr. Morell.
Yes.
And Dr. Morell left her, you know, with everything.
Mm.
And so Mary Lawson decided I was going to be the one that was going to be left.
Mm.
with everything. Not that this influenced me at all. This is something I have no control over.
Yes, it's very nice that she was able to develop.
Well, yes, it just seemed to get really up into a sort of high grade, almost the last moment. You see, she was really at a pitch of ecstasy, almost you might say, when she died.
Yes, well, I didn't think you need to, in any way, sort of reproach yourself with taking her off to France or anything. I think these things are going to happen. They're going to happen. You can't live in a glass case. And she's the last person who
exactly,
would want to do that.
Exactly. She would have hated it.
So I think, I mean, it's all worked out. I mean, it could have been awful if she'd been ill for a long time.
Well, this would have been awful.
That's the way to go. I'd be very happy to go.
Yes, indeed. this would have been awful. And indeed, it was worrying her a lot. You know, I mean, latterly she became rather worried about money.
Did she?
Yes, you know, the rise of costs of living and everything else. And had she left me enough to carry on in Mount Street? And would there be enough for Anne? And I would say, you know, you haven't anything to worry about. Because if you need looking after, look, you've got two nurses in one. So, because she had no group like I had, that sort of thing. This used to worry a bit. And then I said, if I die first, well, so you just go and spend all my money and have lots of nurses, so you'll always be looked after.
She wanted you to carry on here, did she? She liked
the
thing
that
you were saying.
Yes, well, this was what she kept worrying about a little. There wasn't going to be enough money for me to stay here. But well, quite frankly, there's no point in my staying here, really.
Well, it is a very big flat, isn't it? A
big flat. And
very expensive, really, I suppose.
Yes. And quite unnecessary for me. I mean, for her, it was very necessary.
Yes, she was a personality who you surrounded with drape curtains.
Yes, it filled it.
But I agree. But still, it's interesting that she liked to think of this being here. It shows how
you see how Dr. Morrell left her, the Four Winds, and all the acreage down there. And I must say that she wasn't very wise about that estate. Although she had great wisdom in business, she didn't have much wisdom there. I would have had a little more wisdom, I think. But she sort of sold off two separate parcels of land for very little. And then she suddenly, about 3 years ago now, I suppose it is, practically gave the rest of the land away to one of them.
They built houses on the land.
There are two houses built on this, which were still left with 40 acres, having given away 16 acres. And for a pittance, she sold the 40 acres to one of the chaps on the estate.
That's rather unusual. Was she very
friendly? Right down there. No, not a bit. They got round her, I think. Down at Frimley, you see, there's a very good place to hold on to.
Yeah.
I was very sorry that I didn't offer to buy it. I was trying to buy the house, one house, the original people who bought it from her after the war. He died and they were selling it up. And I tried to buy it, but I hadn't sold my nursing home then, so I didn't want a bridging loan. And then I thought, oh, well, I can't see myself going up and down there at the weekends, you know, with Marion. It's all going to be too much. Much sooner just go to odd hotels and weekends and so on. So I let it drop. But had I thought of it, I'd have given her twice as much money for the rest of the land, which now would have been quite an asset.
Surprising, because she was such a good businesswoman.
Yes, indeed. Yes, but she let all that asset go away somehow.
Did you both go to Four Winds then?
It had already been sold before I came into the picture.
I see.
She sold it soon after the war because she said that Dr. Bone died The soldiers used to get in, and there was a lot of breaking in and that sort of thing. So she just sold it.
It was left to her by Christine Morel, was it? Or at least,
yes.
Presumably.
It was left to Dr. Bone in her lifetime.
I see. Mm.
And Dr. Bone died down there. And then it came to Marion.
So did she go, she then sold it off then?
Yes, she never went back to live in it.
I see, yes. And never even went down there?
Oh yes, we used to go down quite a lot. We used to go down and have picnics on the grounds. It was lovely. Lovely, I mean, she could have done an awful lot for fir trees, for Christmas trees. But she didn't seem to have that sense of business.
So she went into her land, but not into the house.
That's right, yes.
That's rather moving, isn't it, that she wanted to do that?
Oh yes, she loved to go down to Four Winds. But,
Did she like Dr. Bowen, actually? I mean, they must have got on well together, because they lived together, didn't they?
I think she did, yes, because they often all went away together,
yes.
The three of them.
Yes.
But I think that there must have been some jealousy on Dr. Bone's part. I can't imagine that.
Well,
suddenly get a third person coming in. I know that I should be very intolerant to them.
But the biography says not.
No.
It's a remarkable thing. But anyway, obviously the main influence on her life is Christine Morel and not Dr.
Oh, yes,
Bone.
Indeed. Mm. Oh, indeed.
That's
and she did her duty and went down and visited Dr. Bone when she was, not sure what she was dying of. Consumption.
Well, she had bad health anyway.
She had a bad heart, that's right.
Yes.
She had a bad heart.
Yes.
And so,
anyway, would you like to